Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast, episode number 8 for July 17th, 2019. I am your co-host, Patsy Zarilla, and with me are our very special guest, Phyllis Ramsey, founder and owner of Ramsey Law in Nashville, Tennessee. How are you, Phyllis?
I am great. How are you?
If I was any better, I couldn't stand it.
Frank,
Frank is busy in Paris. He decided to take a vacation instead of doing our podcast, but he said exactly. He was going to call in. He said he was going to be on. He's just going to be a little bit late. So, considering that we're home and he's on vacation in Paris, we decided we're going to start without him. Before we go on, Phyllis, did you want to, kind of introduce yourself to everybody and let everybody know what you specialize in?
Absolutely. So I am Phyllis Ramsey, known to most people as Phil or just that girl. I own a law firm. We are based in Nashville, but we're actually everywhere. We also do work in the DC area. So in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, also Kentucky. And anywhere you need us, you give us a shout. We'll find somebody to help you. But our firm probably does 80% or 90% employment work on the employee side. But the firm has a motto of seek justice, defend the oppressed. So we handle a lot of other matters too. Our basic goal is to get legal services to people who may otherwise not have access to legal services, or just people who may not understand the legal process, you know, new business owners or people who have a bad attitude or bad perception about attorneys. We're here to change that. So thank you for having me on today.
Believe me, thank you. Folks, it's just, you know, just this martial arts guy surrounded by a couple of attorneys.
Hey, I need martial arts too. I need to learn how to defend myself.
Yeah, I do have an engineering degree. Actually, I pay my mortgage through my engineering degree. So,
you know. Okay.
it's just more fun, you know, hurting people.
There you go.
It's very therapeutic. This past Sunday, in what can only be considered an absolutely moronic attempt to take advantage of a rift between the squad, who, in case anybody, you know, didn't know, is AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Anya Pressley, and Rashida Tlaib, otherwise known as the squad, which I got to be honest is a great name. Okay. I mean, it's just cool as shit. And Speaker Pelosi, there was a bit of let's just say that the laundry should not have been, should have been done in public. It should have stayed behind closed doors. But anyhow, Trump decided to send out a series of, probably the most vulgar racist tweets I've ever heard in my life. And it just set off a total shitstorm. He claimed that women and, before I go any further, I should say that our sources, BBC News, Market Watch, Time Magazine, I'll add more as we go. He claimed that the women, quote, originally came from countries whose governments are complete and total catastrophe, before suggesting they just go back to their countries. What's kind of interesting about that is AOC, Rashida Tlaib, and Anya Pressley, all born and raised here, and Ilhan Omar came to the U.S. as a refugee at age 12 and, you know, got her citizenship. She did it the right way, kind of like Trump's third wife did, and has just been absolutely...
It's wonderful. It's
look, there's no other way to put this. This was targeted racism.
Right?
There's just no other way to put it.
Paris is very multicultural.
And
people from
I have
my section of town that I'm in is very
my my feelings as to why he did it.
African immigrants,
and I'm curious to hear yours.
And in France, they have their
I mean, I think he did it the same reason he does everything else. He's a bully.
Making a living over here.
He tries to intimidate people.
It seems to be working out pretty well.
But that insult, and yes, it was an insult, a very racist insult.
You know,
it was just a cop-out.
I don't hear too much rhetoric. They just had a very big national holiday. I don't hear any rhetoric.
You know, that's one of the biggest insults you can give to somebody who you either think is not from here, and that also shows a level of ignorance that he did not know or pretends not to know. But it's bullying. It's insulting. It's racism and really white supremacy at its finest. But that's an age-old insult, as I said. I mean, I'm a Black woman, and I have heard many times if we complain about something here, and I'm born and raised in the United States as well, but, you know, whenever we complain or stand up for things that are wrong, you get that age-old insult. Well, just go back where you came from. You know, I'm a Black woman, so I used to get, well, go back to Africa. I didn't even travel to Africa until I was an adult. But,
right.
but that's an age-old insult. You know, it's all a part of a systematic structure.
Yeah, I did get to hear about
designed
this,
to oppress people.
Of what y'all were talking about. And one thing I'd like to add.
It absolutely
that,
is. You know, I
said it before the last 5 minutes.
Where I was born and raised.
But kind of along
which
the
geographically
what they
isn't very far from where I am now. But
forceful with
specifically,
it is the idea that
it.
You know, why don't the Democrats pull back?
Like night and day, right? It's
kind of
totally different. Whenever I moved out here to Mayberry, my wife is from out here. In fact, we live next to my in-laws.
Very un-American.
When I moved out here, I was probably one of like four people whose name ends in a vowel. And I can tell you honestly that there were people in my own kitchen who has said, you know, maybe your husband should go back where he came from.
They are decidedly
un-American.
Yeah.
And
so
I would love to start
it gets better than
that way.
You know,
and
better.
See the Democrats
it gets better than you think, right? Yeah, and
but
you know, yeah, that actually
that's supposed to be about. That's interesting
really
because
start
you
labeling
know
him and his supporters as
not just these most recent comments of Trump's, but so many of his comments that obviously we're all horrified. I can't really
and
say we're shocked
too.
Or surprised, but we're horrified. But Trump really articulates and symbolizes what so many people think. So as you say in Mayberry, where you are, people have said that. I've heard those comments directed at me before. And I think that's the really interesting thing is that some people act like he has made up these insults. As I said before, that's an age-old insult. Even when he's been insulting, he's not very creative with it because he's saying things that people have said for years. So at least if you want to insult somebody, make up a new insult. But I think one thing that his time in the presidency has shown us is that he's just articulating what so many people have said for so long and what so many think people have thought, rather, for so long. And now they can just be more bold with it. And I think that's the really serious problem. I'm not that scared of Trump. I don't think he will ever get near me. I hope. I mean, there is no reason for us to ever even be in the same room. But I am scared of neighbors or colleagues or just people walking down the street who I will come in with contact with on a daily basis who have these thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, you're just, you know, walking across the street to get a coffee and they see some Black woman walking across the street and they buy into this shit. And next thing you know, you have a problem.
Right. Or you are on an airplane, as I was a few weeks ago, or often when I fly, and I was in first class a few weeks ago on an airplane, and a woman said, so what do you do? Are you a flight attendant? You got your ticket for free?
No way.
No, ma'am. I work an awful lot of hours. I'm also a frequent flyer. So that's how I got this ticket. But yeah, so it's the same, you know, it's the same comments on a different spectrum because what she really meant was, why don't you go back where you came from, which is probably she thought it meant coach class or even something else. But the only way to her that I could be flying in first class was to work for the airline and get a free ticket.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? It almost makes you wonder what's worse, right? The blatant one or the nice hidden little, you know, like, to me, I'd almost rather hear the blatant one because whenever you do something like that lady did to you, not only are you still hitting me with this shit, you also think I'm stupid.
Right. You know? And it throws me off. I mean, again, the not much that Trump says anymore surprises me. Or shocks me, it offends me, I'm horrified, but it doesn't really surprise or shock me. But when you're catching an 8 a.m. flight and just trying to enjoy your little wine that you're drinking before the flight even takes off. And yes, I did say 8 a.m. and I was drinking wine, but that's a different story for a different podcast. But it messes up your day. It messes up your day. And as somebody who fights for justice, you have to stop and ask yourself, you know, do I fight this? Do I explain systematic racism to this woman at 8 o'clock in the morning with a glass of wine in my hand? Or do I save my energy and fight other battles?
Yeah, and you also kind of makes you wonder, do you even want to get into that, especially on an airplane, right? I mean,
absolutely. Well, that's the other thing. That's the other thing that I think these sorts of comments are so horrifying, because they really box the person that you're bullying, that you're offending in, because, you know, especially particularly for Black women, for women of color, we're already considered angry and violent, you know. So if I had cursed this woman out on the plane, which is what I really wanted to do, then what do I have, 15 air marshals tackling me and throwing me off the plane? Or, you know, I'm sure she would have played the innocent role. No, I really thought you were a flight attendant. I didn't mean anything. And then, you know, you get those tears, those oppressor's tears that so many people are so used to throwing out there.
Then you sit there and you wonder, well, you kind of get, you're like, son of a bitch, I just gave her what she wanted.
Everything.
Right.
You know? I just walked right into it, and here you guys just handed
it
to
me. I walked right into it. You know? So in that particular situation, I chose not to walk into it. I just continued drinking my very fabulous drink and making sure to just turn around every 2 or 3 minutes and give her a very hard stare.
Good for you. I hope she was totally and completely uncomfortable the whole freaking trip, you know?
Oh yeah, I think I did my job.
Good. She probably got off of that plane as quick as she could.
Like, oh, I saw a Black woman today. They're so mean.
I know she didn't get that ticket by herself.
She probably dates a basketball player, or maybe she's Beyonce's backup dancer, or I know there's no way she could afford that ticket.
I haven't counted one.
Later on, it's going to be really hard to stay on topic today. I can
That's
tell.
Okay. We don't have to.
Trump defended his tweets that same day while speaking in front of the White House on Monday, saying, as far as I'm concerned, if you hate our country, if you're not happy here, you can leave. That's what I say all the time, right up until you got to be president, I guess, or afterwards.
Phyllis,
I should say,
anybody that you've noticed?
The whole time you were running, or whenever you were starting to run, all you did was bitch about everything. But that's a whole nother. When asked if he was concerned about his tweets being seen as racist, Trump replied, "It doesn't concern me because many people agree with me." You know, we have a tendency, and we're seeing this a lot, especially coming from the right, where they say, well, a lot of people say, or many people are saying, and this asshole's bread and butter, right? A lot of people are saying, you know, or a lot of people told me, you know, well, good, I got news for you, you know, fuckstick. A lot of people say that the earth is flat.
Right.
You know? I mean, I don't get it. How is that justification? A lot of people don't realize, you know, 1 and 1 is 2, but, you know, math doesn't care what people say. Math is what it is.
A lot truth of people is what showed truth up is. For lynch mobs. A lot of people showed up for lynch mobs. It didn't make lynching right, but a lot of people showed up and participated.
Right. Exactly the point. And I'm half convinced that he knows that. And it's just playing into this shit more and more. Because at some point he's saying, you know, he's telling the David Dukes of the world, I hear you, I understand you, I'm on board with you.
So, you know, it's a dog whistle. You blow some whistles and we can't hear them as humans, but a dog can hear it. So he knows. I mean, he's speaking in coded language, but not very coded. But he knows. I mean, yes, that message was directed at the squad, at those sisters. But that message was also directed at his extremist supporters, at white supremacists, at those people, as I said before, who believe that and just that's haven't
right.
been
and I think,
either
you know, it's
as
a much
vocal
more
or they don't have a big platform that is more big as the platform that Trump has.
More
but he knows
to point
exactly what he's doing so, when he says that and exactly whose
exactly.
ears start up.
Also,
you know, it's like when you're watching TV sometimes or listening to the radio
the
and you're doing something else and not really paying attention until that one song comes on or until the newscaster says that one thing that catches your attention.
Comparable
your ears
to
perk up.
The racist.
We've all seen
but
it.
Look
and
back to
that,
the
that is what he's
doing.
He's perking the ears up of
well,
those extremist supporters.
At the beginning of the presidency, when it first started. First
5 minutes before
lie about
the squad
and remember what
were
the
to start
say,
a press conference. And I'll be honest, I'm 51 years old, and I don't remember ever seeing four Congress people.
Accurate what he said. You know,
Senators,
they
House,
say, well,
anybody
he statement.
On
they
like,
never said he lied until
on
one
a
day
dime,
somebody finally started
told a
one of the news
four person
said,
press conference about something that happened. I mean, now
he
honestly,
lied,
like I said,
and then they
you know, the memory's
tally.
Starting to go a little
I
bit, but I honestly don't remember. I don't remember really that ever happening. 5 minutes before they were start their presser, he tweets again, doubling down. He actually ends up tripling down, but at this point in our story, he doubles down on the attacks he made earlier in the day. Saying
so
we will never be a socialist
is,
or communist country, then in caps, honestly, God,
yeah,
there's no way in hell he rates these things because everything he spelled communist straight. There's no freaking way he actually did it. In caps, he puts, if you're not happy here, you can leave. It is, and then he goes on, it is your choice and your choice alone. This is about love for America. Certain people hate our country. And he just goes on and on and on and on and on. What got me going and you know, what gives me hope is the responses that these four women gave. Obviously, AOC's was a lot more pointed, but that's just her personality. That's how she is. This is probably why I'm such a big fan of hers, is because she kind of cuts through all the bullshit and goes straight to the point. And you don't have to like it. And honestly, I don't think she cares, but you're going to pay attention to her, and I think that's what she wants, right? She has something to say, and damn it, you're going to listen to her. But all four of these women I thought were absolutely spot on. Like I said, they give me so much hope about where we're headed. Omar said, this is a president who has openly violated the very values of our country aspires to uphold. Boy, did my interpretation of that was bad. This is the agenda of white nationals. He will have nothing more than to divide our country based on race, religion, gender orientation, or immigration status. She also pointed out how these remarks hit close to home for many minority communities. Yeah, it does. I yes, it does. When he said go back to where he came from, and this is kind of going back to your point, when he said go back to where he came from, there was an uproar through all of our communities because every single person who's brown or black at some point in their life in this country heard that. When he made that comment, I knew every single Muslim who lived in this country and across the world heard that comment. AOC went on, like I said, I love her to death. I hope next election we get 15 more of her. Weak minds and leaders challenge, and this is a great line, weak minds and leaders challenge loyalty to our country in order to avoid challenging and debating the policy. This president does not know how to make the argument that Americans do not deserve health care. He does not know how to defend his policies, so he's attacking us personally. And that is such a typical shallow, I have nothing to defend myself with, so I will attack you personally type thing to do. Tlaib added, I represent the third poorest district in the country, one that is made up of working people who continue to be targeted and harmed by the actions and rhetoric of this administration.
Stunning.
Phil, like I said, I cannot say enough about how excited I am whenever I hear these four women talk.
Yeah, I mean,
Mitch McConnell.
I think that everything, they're all spot on. We know what this means. And again, you can't attack policy. Actually, in many instances, the president cannot articulate policy. But the thing he can do is make personal attacks. And that takes the attention away. Of course, I mean, look at all of us for the last few days. I've forgotten about some of the policy things that I had consider close to my heart and consider, you know, that I want to consider for the next election. And we've all been going around saying, well, damn it, he said what? Or what the fuck? You know, I mean, seriously, like last week this time or before he said it, I was like, okay, let's get back to healthcare and what do people do about student loans and who can we get to run in this next election? Who am I going to vote for? And ever since he said it, it's been every day we're thinking about this. So he's done a, I don't want to use the word good with anything, but he's done a job of turning the attention away from the real issues. Come on now. You know, he's telling people to go back to where they came from. Tell your people to give me the fucking vote that you brought us over here on. But but that's a different story as well. You know, if we really need to go back where we came from, then let's take all the labor and everything we built. Black and brown people built this country.
There wouldn't be much left.
Right. So if you want people to go back to where they came from, take everything that they built, take the labor that they built. There are millionaires in this country now who are built off the blood, sweat, and tears of black and brown people. So if, you know, it's like, if you kick me out of your house, you can kick me out of your house, but I'm taking everything I brought up in there with me. So I'm taking my top shelf liquor that I brought. I'm taking, if I brought food and refreshments, I'm taking that. So yeah.
Well, speaking of going back home, looks like Frank decided to join us all the way from Paris. How you doing, Frank? How's vacation? Yeah, isn't that funny?
Imagine that.
Yeah, and here we are in a melting pot, right? And we have to hear this shit. Frank, I don't know how much of our conversation you've heard so far, but basically we were talking about our resident racist
right.
in chief
exactly
last few days.
I was thinking back about,
we've gotten up to the point
Dr.
where
Carson and Omarosa and even
the
to a lesser extent,
the squad
Kanye
had
West.
their four person presser.
President Trump, of course, trying to say, here are my black friends.
So is there anything you want to touch
power,
on before we continue?
Of authority. And look at my friend Kanye, who comes to the White House with me, and I give him this platform. So how could I be racist? Well, you know, look at the full page ad you took out in the New York Times to claim that, you know, the Central Park Five should be, you know, on death row or in jail for life or whatever. And the times that you discriminated against black people in your apartments, et cetera. And, you know, every action you've taken, every word you've said, you know, since you've been president, has been to exclude Muslims, to try to stop people from coming in from the southern border, which are clearly brown people. You know, all of his actions belie who his quote unquote friends are. Yeah.
I don't even want to label them as anti-American. I just want to call them racist. I just want to call them flat-out racist. No, I really do. And I'll be honest. You know, Frank, you and I, over the course of the last few weeks on this pod, have gone back and forth about the whole impeachment thing. And is it time? Is it not time? Is it what? Well, yeah, I got news for you. I've been radicalized, dude. It's time. It's time. If this clown is good, because he's not done. I mean, he's just getting started on his campaign. This is just the beginning. It's time to get this asshole out of there. Yeah, what's racist? Hey, Britt Hume. Let's think about this name for a second. Britt Hume is going to tell people what's racist and what isn't, right? You know, honestly, that takes a lot of balls. That really does.
But I think that's an
they've
got
to be the size of freaking watermelons to do that because, oh my God, Britt Hume. That's the equivalent of him telling us, Frank, how to make sauce.
But that's an important point about language and about the words that we use to describe this, because the president did try to frame his bullying, his criticism in terms of this is American. This is what it means. If you are in America, you love America, you don't criticize America. He's trying to position the squad is anti-American. And then even mm-hmm. many people who have criticized his comments have not, they said, oh, it's offensive or it was wrong or he should not have said it. He should not have tweeted it. But you're right. It's racism. And we've got to stop hiding behind pretty words. You know, I hate the word microaggression or microaggression, whatever people say, because there is nothing micro about it. When you try to take my rights, you try to make me feel intimidated because of my skin color, because of my gender. And I do think we have to start calling it what it is. It's racism, plain out, point blank, period. It's racism. And we have to start saying that. I mean, we have to say our president is a racist. Those who support him and his comments are racist. Those who refuse to criticize his comments, you're a racist, or you damn sure like to support racism.
Yeah, silence is compliance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I look back, you know, with nostalgically, and I remember, and Frank, I remember going to, I believe it was Beaver Falls, or maybe it was just south of Beaver Falls. And Phil, you have no idea where this is, but just play along with us like you've been here like all your life. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I remember going down, and it was whenever Obama was campaigning for his first term, right? When he was running for president the first time, and him and Joe Biden made a stop there in Beaver Falls, and Lisa and I went, we brought Nick with us, and you heard him talk, and you heard how he approached things and what he was saying, and you got goosebumps, right? You sat there and you said, holy shit, you know, this is the American dream. This is what we are, everybody in this country is looking for. This is what what every single person wants to achieve. Well, dude, that was only 10 years ago. Right? Look at where we are now. It boggles the mind that we could drop so far in a decade. It really absolutely boggles my mind that in 10 years we could drop this low. Where this shit that, remember the big deal because he wore a freaking brown suit, or because Michelle right. showed her arms and wasn't wearing sleeves?
Those were the days.
No, I think it's a great point. And I think there's clearly, you know, some self preservation or you know, kind of like that idea of, well, you know, if we're going to start calling this racist, then I really have to take a hard look at myself and say, have I done or said racist things? And, you know, I think the thing that's really, to be honest with everybody,
I will say this much. I mean, if my arms were as toned as Michelle's was, I'd be going sleeveless too.
It can help people kind of come to terms with that.
Because, man, she's got some nice arms.
Racism is so institutionalized.
But honestly,
I know people don't.
It kills me.
I'm not trying to believe
all these people that were bitching and whining about that. And how many Republicans over since Sunday? So we got Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and today. We got 4 days.
There's a study
at
Harvard. Maybe we should link.
Came out and said, you know what? That was racist.
But
how many
of them? You can take this study and it really will show you that you have bias.
I counted, honestly, I counted one.
Internalized racism.
I can't think of his name. He's Mexican descent. He's from Texas. Wears glasses.
You just have.
Can't think of his name.
Biases.
He's the only one that came flat out and said, and this was yesterday. I think it was on.
So the sooner. Just kind of
Nicole Wallace's show, who said, now this is flat out racism.
I have these
things. He's the only one that I saw.
We have to acknowledge it and just say, you know what? We have to face it and really start working.
Not that I've noticed, but, you know, again, people think it's such a nasty word, and it's not. You know, we say many other words. I say much worse words.
Create problems for our society.
We said much worse today.
But for the entire society.
On a daily basis. But I think, again, it goes back to the point of language. I mean, even if you get
so-called supporters
sometimes or liberal people, as soon as you mention the word racism, everybody gets scared or says, oh, don't say that. It's too harsh.
You won't get the support.
But that's what it is. You know, that's what it is. I don't care if you are
definition of racism
not telling people to go back to your country. I don't care if you are a woman on the plane asking me how I am in first class. You are a racist. And if we don't start saying the word, you know, if it's walking across the damn pond and it's got an orange beak and it's quacking and it's wobbling, it is a duck.
But we're in such a broken system that the parties,
no question about it. It is not a dog. It is not a cat. It's a duck.
Right?
You're telling people to go back to the country, go back to their own country. You're racist. And we have to start saying that. And even liberal people and people who are so-called progressive, you've got to say it. You can't get up there and give a long speech about how he was just inappropriate. You know, it's inappropriate, I guess, to bring my beer to church. It is racism. That's inappropriate, you know. I know what inappropriate behavior is. I indulge in inappropriate behavior all the time. And I also know racist behavior. And there is a difference. And say, you know, using these nice words, inappropriate, that was, and it was offensive, but it was racist.
And it's sick.
And I think we really need to address the language, because until then, until we address the language and how we describe these things, it doesn't seem like it's as bad as it is. Right.
Well, he'd certainly lose, because as soon as the people in the town saw that he had brown skin or black skin, they'd certainly vote against him.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that you know, I must have said, Frank, I must have said it for, you know, three pods in a row. We're overinflating one simple number. He still lost the popular vote, right? So there were 3 million people who already decided this guy wasn't worth a fuck. He's just digging a hole. You know, my wife tells me all the time, whenever we used to get into arguments, like we still don't. You know, when you find yourself in a hole, quit digging, right?
There you go.
Well, you know, sometimes I follow her advice. Other times I'm just too damn stubborn. But in any case, you still have the same thing. This guy's digging himself a hole, and the only people he's being seen in a positive light are people that were going to vote for him anyhow, which was a minority.
Like I said earlier, I also think, I mean, yeah, he lost the popular vote, but again, he represents so much of what people think and feel, and just were not either bold enough or didn't have the platform to say. I mean, because let's face it, the man does not, he gets criticized from a certain group of us, We're sitting here criticizing him now, but he gets away with an awful lot. That means that somebody deep down agrees with him. You know, it's like when you see a kid hit another kid, but you're kind of glad that the kid hit that kid because either you've seen that kid be bullying on the playground. So you turn your head, or you may like halfway whisper, "Get over here, don't hit." But in your head, you're like, I hope you knock that kid out. And that's what his presidency is symbolic of to me, is these people turning their heads because they really believe what he said. They just haven't been bold enough to say it, or haven't had the platform, the money, the power machines behind them to say it. But it's very telling to me that he does not get criticized more. What's even more telling is that people actually defend it. I mean, we talked about who has not come out and said he's a racist. Let's look at how many people have come out and said he's not a racist. That there was nothing wrong with what he said. That's more telling to me.
Yeah, you had... Did you guys happen to hear what's his name? Come on, in the Senate, the turtle. Come on. What am I drawing a blank? Mitch McConnell, thank you. Wait.
Did you just call him a turtle?
Yeah, I did.
I'll now never be okay, I'll never be able to look at him again.
Did you ever see the Looney Tunes cartoon, you know, where the turtle's bringing home a baby bumblebee?
Yeah. That's
there you go.
Now I must recover, but okay.
Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry. I just ruined, like, every time you see him again, I just ruined it.
Yes.
I'm so sorry. He was asked about, you know, was this racist? Was it not? And of course he said, no, it wasn't. And then one of the reporters, I'm kind of paraphrasing here. One of the reporters, mentioned his wife who was naturalized. They came over, was naturalized, and is now in Trump's cabinet. And he said, yeah, well, she lived the American dream. And I'm thinking, well, what the fuck did she do that Tlaib didn't?
Right.
Why is she living the American dream and Tlaib has to go back to where she came from?
Absolutely. I mean, that says something about privilege. That says something about skin color. That says something about the party that's in power right now. But that is very telling. I mean, but even in his defense of it, because, you know, there was a lot of conversation last week with Mitch McConnell and his comments that his relatives and Obama's relatives own slaves. And, you know, there's a lot been written in the last week about his family's history of slavery. But that's just the old excuse, the old tears, the old adage that we've all heard, especially if you're black or brown, when somebody tries to prove that they're not racist. But I have a black friend.
Black friend.
I used to date somebody, you know, every time I try, particularly when I tell people, you know, that something they said may have been racist or a little off, their comeback to me is always, I didn't tell you about the black girl I dated in college, did I? And I'm like, yeah, that makes up for all
absolutely
your racist scenes.
He attacked us for women. It's the perfect.
Yeah, right, because that's what it was all about. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fact that Mitch McConnell is married to somebody who is technically not white, the fact that Donald Trump is married to someone who is not from this country, that does not mean that there is no racism. That does not mean that they will not, they do not have a racist bone in their body, as Trump said the other day. That just means that
she's the kind of the outlier. She's the only woman that
they found one particular person that they think is the other, meaning that they don't necessarily think that they fit in with everybody else.
When she was in the
primary, fit in said, with that group that they are,
you know, he called her a horse
oppressing
face
or
and,
intimidating.
You know, he made it very personal in his attack on her. And now this perfect cocktail is he's got four women who are,
young, smart, aggressive, popular, but they happen to be of, they happen to be brown or Latino, Latina, and they happen to be somebody that he can try to attack on a personal level and give nicknames to and deride personally. So it's his pattern. And yeah, definitely he's intimidated by women, and he's shown that, and it's his go-to, like, a playbook type thing. So
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, this guy was the biggest promoter of the birther movement, for fuck's sake. On Tuesday morning, Trump and Phil touched on this, tweeted more. I just love when he tweets, because honest to God, like, every like Democratic anything, there's going to be running ads to just like just show his tweets. Yeah. Don't even just put some like scary music and just show his tweets, right? And that's your commercial right there. Trump defended his comments in more tweets on Tuesday, writing, "I don't have a racist bone in my body." Like, well, I said, Phil touched on that. To which AOC responded with, again in the tweet, "You're right, Mr. President. You don't have a racist bone in your body. You have a racist mind in your head, a racist heart in your chest. That's why you violate the rights of children and tell the congresswoman who represents your home borough to go back to my country." I'm telling you, she's on point.
Candidate on the Democrat side.
Later yesterday,
I don't know if you saw this. Either of
last
you
night,
this,
I should say, the House and of Representatives passed a resolution condemning President Donald Trump for his racist comments about the four
single mom, and she's struggling to make ends meet. And then
women,
she can't
the
get
ones
a
that,
she
you know, the four that we've been talking about. This is coming from NBC News.
And now she can't get any kind
the resolution
of
passed
all,
largely along party lines. 235 Democrats joined by only four Republicans.
And she said,
I promise you, at least one, probably two, are probably not running for re-election.
Putting people behind when I'm struggling.
Following
with
hours
of
back and forth gamesmanship between Republicans and Democrats. Say what you want about Pelosi, but whenever who's the minority leader in the
everybody to
in
take
the,
a look
in
at
the house.
It and read it,
what the hell's his name?
Exactly
he's
what
such a piece
we were kind
of garbage.
Talking about earlier in the book about racism and how it's so systemic and endemic. And
no,
she said
no, Jordan. No, I can't.
I
tell you what,
to
Jordan's going to make such an ass of himself next week. It's not going
to
be funny.
She said, "Look, I know.
Oh, come on, come on. He's the minority leader. It's killing me. It's killing me.
Your particular problem."
I'm even looking at the news article. I can't seem to find it anywhere, and I saw it. I'm telling you, I saw it.
You just talked about. We know you personally are not privileged.
Yeah. There you go. That's it.
But white privilege is a system that is set up for people that
he tried to
automatically from the beginning.
Ding Pelosi on because Pelosi flat out
really well,
called it racism or racist tweets or racist comments, and he tried to ding her on that, and she was like, "No, I already cleared this with the parliamentary whatever," and she just like slapped him down and said, "You know, get the fuck out of here, shut up."
In communities like Youngstown, Ohio, and Detroit, Michigan, and places like that, you know, and that we can't just ignore those.
Oh, Jason. Well, no, that's not it. Anyhow,
we have to fix.
It went along party lines. Only four Republicans,
and that has to be a priority,
sided with the Democrats. Like I said, I bet you any amount of money you want to bet that at least two of them are not running for re-election. This brings up a whole other
problem
with me.
And it was a super answer. I'm not doing it justice, but like,
why does something
that
is so blatantly and shamefully racist have to go down party lines? Why can't you just say, you know what? No, that's racist. I'm sorry, it is.
Problems that are existing within the country. Racism.
Well, I think it'll be a criticism of yourself as well. I mean, I think that's why it's so on party lines, because I think for a number of Republicans to come out and just denounce this as what it is, and that's racism, they also have to take a hard look at themselves. As I said, it's on a spectrum. So while he may have said, "Go back to your country," you know, everybody that has ever called the cops on some black person trying to get into an apartment building or questioned somebody, followed someone around a store or, you know, anything like that. That's all on the same spectrum. And so if you denounce him saying go back to your country, you got to denounce yourself for calling the cops on somebody trying to enter a building. And if you denounce if somebody trying to call the cops for on somebody, some black man for entering a building, then you also have to denounce yourself for grabbing your purse when a black man walks down the street beside you. So I think it's because it's all on the spectrum, they know that that spectrum is going to eventually swing to them.
Frank?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think just to echo what you're saying and just to kind of put another kind of exclamation point on it, nothing's a zero sum game. You know, if we're helping each other out, people are helping one another. It's a positive, a net positive. You know, there's no zero sum game. We're not taking away from one to give to another. We have to address all the problems. And that's one of the things that the Republicans and Trump like to do is to say they try to zero in on whether it's rights or whether it's, you know, racism or sexism. Oh, you know, you think it's bad here. Well, you know, you think it's bad here. Well, how would you like it if you were in this other country where they don't let people, women dress with anything but a hijab and something over their head? That's where they really have it bad with their rights. You know, you have it really good here in this country if you're a woman, as compared to somewhere in the Middle East where they force them to wear these certain kind of clothes all the time, where they don't let them drive. So they always try to, you know, the whataboutism, the comparisons, the fact that we can't walk and chew gum at the same time. They think that that's something we can't do, that we can't. It's always a zero-sum game. But, you know, clearly it's not. And there's intersectional problems, as you mentioned. But it's not a zero-sum game. We need to be able to fix all, you know, at least work on fixing all the problems. We can acknowledge that we're not perfect. We can acknowledge that we're far from perfect. And that's a good thing. That's very American. That's very patriotic to say, hey, look, we have flaws. Let's try to fix them. Let's fix them together.
So that's one thing. The other thing that we need to talk about is the idea that
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, you've heard me say all the time out here in Mayberry, right? If Jesus Christ himself ran as a Democrat, he would lose North Beaver Township. He would lose where I say that as sure as I am convinced my son is mine. I would bet an obscene amount of money, even money that I don't have, that he would lose North Beaver Township if he ran as a Democrat. I promise you he would. Oh, absolutely. And then
right,
actually,
right, let's have church in here. Let's have black church in here.
I mean, I've been saying that since I you know, came out here. And well, anyhow, Monday and Tuesday, USA Today had an online poll. 1,005 people took the poll. A majority see President Trump's tweets as un-American. However, there's a huge partisan difference, and here we go. This tells you, this pretty much confirms everything that well, really, both of you have been saying. Overall, 59% of the people polled, when asked if President Trump's tweets calling on four Democratic congresswomen to go back to their, quote, original countries instead of criticizing the United States were un-American. Overall, 59% agreed. 88% of that was Democrat, 25% were Republican,
pleasure, I bet.
And 54% were independent.
Great dynamic. I hope we can do it this way again at some point in time.
Two-thirds of those surveyed, 65%, said telling minority Americans to, quote, go back to where they came from was a racist statement. Nearly three-quarters of Democrats strongly agreed with that. Republicans were inclined to agree that the comment was racist, but only by a narrow margin of 45% to 34%. Republicans were much more skeptical of charges of racism. Generally, 70% agreed that people who call others racist usually do so in bad faith. On that question, Democrats were split. 31% agreed, 35% disagreed. So that's pretty much down the middle. When it came to patriotism, an overwhelming majority, 72% of Democrats, 93% of Republicans, said they were proud to be an American, while 75% of Republicans also said they were proud of America right now. However, just 29% of Democrats agree on that. I am going to make an argument and say that that is probably driven mostly by the demographic of each party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say that the overwhelming majority of Republicans, and I don't have any numbers to back it up, but I'm just making a guess, are white, probably my age. I don't know if they're men and women or women. I would guess it's probably more men than women, but I don't think that it's the difference is much to argue over. However, I think the Democratic side is far more representative of our country. It is far more diverse. And I would guess I'm going to take a shot in the dark and say probably younger.
Yeah, I would agree with that somewhere along those lines. It'll be interesting if we could get people to be honest enough. The poll I would like to see done, the survey I would like to see done is ask people, when have you ever told somebody to go back to their country? <You know? laughs> When is the time? Because we see it happen all the time. You know, go to a restaurant where, you know, it's a large immigrant population or immigrant demographic who are employees, and let somebody get upset because their food didn't come out on time or because their food was not right. And listen to the comments that you hear. Go to any hotel and let your towels not be folded exactly how they should be folded, or let, you know, them come clean your room later than you think they should come clean it, or them not clean it just right. And we know that Black and brown people keep hotels running. And listen to the comments you get. Listen at how fast it goes to personal rather than, I mean, if somebody doesn't clean my hotel room correctly, I just need to say, you didn't clean my hotel room correctly. If somebody is a terrible waiter or waitress, you're just a terrible waiter or waitress. But it has nothing to do with what country they're from or where they should go back to or should not go back to. But I would be interested if we could get people to be honest, and probably people wouldn't be honest with the poll like that. But I can imagine that there are Democrats and Republicans who have said that, or at least thought that.
I would be very, very inclined to agree with you. I think that, you know, people are going to say what they think you want them to hear a lot of times, especially whenever they're doing polling or whatever. Right.
Right.
But at the same time, whenever I have a comfortable feeling of anonymity, I'm not so sure that's true. I think that they're more than willing to be a little bit more honest.
Right. Right. Or let somebody get backed into a corner. And that's when you really start hearing. I mean, when you get me nervous or scared or tired or frustrated, then the real feel really starts.
Right, because then the emotion takes over and the logic goes away.
Right, yeah. And so I think that's one of the things that is happening with our president. I mean, we talked about it earlier, but he can't attack policies, or he knows that he doesn't really have any policies to present. So he's backed into a corner. He's scared. He's nervous. There will be an election, and there need to be some strong candidates coming up to beat him. So again, he's backed into a corner. And imagine that these four badass women are scaring the hell out of him. And you're so backed up into a corner that you the only thing you can say is go back to your country.
And well, strong women have always intimidated him. There's no doubt.
Hey, we rule the world. Strong women rule the world. So, so yeah, but I mean, just imagine that. I mean, we've talked about the racism of it all. A whole other, a whole different show on this is the sexism of it all. Because you said that to four women. You know, there have been plenty of men who've said some stuff that you don't like. There have been plenty of men that you don't like, but you said that to four women.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and if you remember whenever, I'll tell you this much. The reason he hasn't attacked Pelosi is because she went into his house and punched him in the mouth, okay? if you remember whenever she went in and Schumer went in, and, she, you know, of course, Schumer was, you know, hiding behind her skirt, but he is the weakest thing I've ever seen. They went in there and they were talking about the government shutdown, remember? And whenever Trump decided he was going to be all big and badass and said, fine, I'll take it. I'll close the government down. I'll do it. You can blame me for it. Who was he talking to? Because he sure as fuck wasn't talking to Pelosi. He was talking to Schumer, right? Because she went in there, and it wasn't until after she left that he realized this woman just punched me in the mouth. Right? He knew
in the mouth or somewhere else.
Well, you know what? I figured I was in the gutter enough this far. But that's what it is. She intimidates the shit out of him, and he doesn't know how to handle her.
I didn't.
And, you know, my struggle is
And we're not in a competition. We are not asking people to eradicate racism, but keep sexism. We are not asking people to eradicate racism and sexism, but keep classism. And I think that's, that dichotomy is always set up. You know, that's the dichotomy that all the affirmative action cases, people who sued universities for affirmative action, they acted like helping, you know, anybody was taking away this one great white person's chance to go to school and become this great person. And it's not a competition. You know, it's not a competition. But the reality is that definitely intersectional, when you're marginalized on an intersectional level, that it's a very different kind. I have many white women friends who struggle because of sexism, because of poverty. But the bottom line is when I walk into a room, before I say what my class is, before I say what my education is, and we know it, Frank, from constitutional law, my race is an immutable characteristic. And when I walk into a room, when I walk onto an airplane, when I walk into my apartment building, when I walk around the store, and, you know, I didn't see the town hall, but this young lady, when she walks down the street, until she tells us she's poor and struggling and a single mom, we don't know that. In fact, just because of the fact that she is a white woman, when she walks into most places, they'll probably assume that she's from some, that she has a two-family home, white picket fence, and all of that. And that will impact how people see her and how they treat her.
Yeah, it
Yeah, and let's understand that we have different stories. I call it being a topper. So have you ever told somebody, oh, I was so sick last night, I had a headache. And then they tell you, oh man, last night I had to go to the emergency room. And mm-hmm. that's what, you know, you tell somebody like, oh, my family member has cancer. And then they say, oh, my family member has cancer and kidney failure. You know, and that yeah. and that's the thing. When a lot of times I'll tell people about racist incidents or say, tell them something that happened to me that I know was impacted by racism. And I may say, hey, I was in this store and they didn't think I could afford anything. That was racism. Oh, did I tell you about the time that somebody went off on me because I'm a woman? I'm not in competition. I'm not trying to demean your story or make it any less, but I am trying to tell you about a real problem that I face. And I think we can address all of those things, but we can't make it a competition.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that the right has done very well. That's their ability to shape the argument, right? Their messaging is far better than the Democrats are. They know how to compartmentalize things and turn it into, like you said in this example, a competition where, you know what, it's not mine versus you, it's a we thing, but they have the ability to shape it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. Well, folks, I think we're going to wrap this up. Before we call it a pod, Phil, I wanted to thank you for joining us. This has been
thank
absolutely
you for having
amazing.
Me.
I hope you enjoyed it enough to come back with us, because this has been absolutely phenomenal.
Hey, I'm coming back, and not only am I coming back, so I do an event called Sips and Tips. Where we take sips of liquor while we talk about legal tips. I mean, I know, I understand you're not a lawyer, but hey, we can have sips and tips. We're going to merge the two one day.
you know what? I'll meet you halfway. I'll do the sips. You know?
Hey, there you go. All of this stuff is better with a little brown liquor. So.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is.
So I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for having me. I hope you all have me back. Hopefully I don't get in trouble. Hopefully you're not next week talking about a tweet I sent out.
if we do, it'll be positive, I promise. Frank, you took your time out of your vacation to come to the podcast. I can't tell you how big that is. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Absolutely. Let's do it again. Hey, Frank, have fun. Bring us something back. I don't really get into wine, but bring me some whiskey.
Bring something brown back.
Bring some brown whiskey.
I get into too much trouble when I drink something clear. It's got to be brown.
I know. I have to drink brown, too. Let's have a whole show on that about the difference between brown and clear liquor.
Oh,
clear liquor is a clear liquor. Have you in jail?
Yeah. Honest to God, I was just going to say that clear liquor puts me in handcuffs. I can't do that. So anyhow, like we say every Wednesday, and how Master Grant and I say every Sunday, to everybody listening, your time is very valuable, and the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us truly and honestly means a great deal to us. You really have no idea how important your time is to us. So with that being said, for Frank and Phyllis, thank you, everybody. Goodbye. We'll see you next week, and God bless. And Phyllis, thank you, everybody. Goodbye. We'll see.
Butchered Sports, raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Lessons from the Dojang with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show and want to know more, check out dojanglelessons.com and please leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Join us again next week when we discuss whatever the hell's been going on.